When Jesus was born in Bethlehem of Judea, in the days of King Herod, behold, Magi from the east arrived in Jerusalem, saying, "Where is the newborn King of the Jews? We saw his star at its rising and have come to do him homage." When King Herod heard this, he was greatly troubled, and all Jerusalem with him. Assembling all the chief priests and the scribes of the people, he inquired of them where the Christ was to be born. They said to him, "In Bethlehem of Judea, for thus it has been written through the prophet, 'And you, Bethlehem, land of Judah, are by no means last among the rulers of Judah, since from you shall come a ruler who is to shepherd my people Israel.'" Then Herod called the Magi secretly and ascertained from them the time of the star's appearance. He sent them to Bethlehem and said, "Go and search diligently for the child. When you have found him, bring me word that I too may go and do him homage." After their audience with the king, they set out. And behold, the star that they had seen at its rising preceded them until it came and stopped over the place where the child was. They were overjoyed at seeing the star, and on entering the house, they saw the child with Mary, his mother. They prostrated themselves and did him homage. Then they opened their treasures and offered him gifts of gold, frankincense, and myrrh. And having been warned in a dream not to return to Herod, they departed for their country by another way. The Gospel of the Lord.
I really love this Feast of Epiphany. I love preaching the Feast of the Epiphany because I think that several of my favorite themes really converge on this feast day. So I think everything that I'm going to say today I've at some point said before. Please indulge me. And if you think, "Father, we've heard all this before," I really believe in the maxim that repetition is the mother of learning. So, you know, deal with it. So let's start with the question of what does Epiphany mean? It's a strange word, and you know the gospel reading of the Feast of the Epiphany is this story that's very close to our hearts, close to our imagination of the Magi, whether you want to call them the wise men or the kings, what have you. These Magi come from the east because they followed a star, which is a little bit mysterious to us also, and doesn't get a lot of explanation in the gospel. They follow this star to the new king who's born in Bethlehem, and they bring him their gifts of gold, frankincense, and myrrh. However, while this is the dominant image for the Feast of the Epiphany in the Western Church, there are other images from the Gospels that are also used for the Feast of the Epiphany. In the morning office, which is something that mostly priests and deacons and religious pray, but it is a part of the church's liturgy, there's reference to three different gospel events that all are part of this mystery of the Epiphany. One is the Magi coming from the east to visit the child Jesus. Another is the baptism of Jesus in the Jordan. And we remember that when we actually celebrate that feast tomorrow. We remember that when he comes up out of the water, the heavens open, and the Father's voice kind of reveals, "This is my beloved Son, with whom I am well pleased." Right? And then the third thing that we make reference to on the Feast of the Epiphany is the wedding feast at Cana, where Jesus performed his first public miracle. So what do these things all have in common? They help us understand what Epiphany is. So the fact that there are three different, oh, and by the way, some of these other images for Epiphany are more prevalent in like the Eastern churches, like the Byzantine church, which is part of the Catholic Church. They focus more, for instance, on the baptism of Jesus in the Jordan. So what it tells us is Epiphany means something more than just the visit of the Magi to Jesus. So what does Epiphany mean? Well, Epiphany is the celebration of the manifestation of God's glory. It's a moment where maybe the veil that separates, you know, the truth of God from our eyes is pulled back a little bit and we catch a peak, right? We might say another manifestation or another epiphany moment would be the transfiguration, right? When we kind of get a glimpse of God's glory. Think about how we use the word epiphany in everyday speech, right? If you one day have a moment of clarity in your thoughts or come to understand something in a new way or have like an inspiration, you might say, oh, I had an epiphany. That's because it's not necessarily that you learned something new, but somehow something clicked into place and you saw something in a new way. And maybe you saw it deeper and realized it better, right? That's essentially what we call epiphany. Hopefully in our spiritual lives, we've all had some epiphany moments, some moment where, again, because God is not just truth, He's also goodness and beauty and oneness. So it's not always necessary that we learn something new. But hopefully we've all had at least one or two experiences where our faith deepens, where something clicks into place, and suddenly we see the truth of the faith or the goodness or the beauty of the faith in a deeper way. And even though nothing in the world has actually changed, it all looks different to us. Right? The world looks different after that epiphany moment. And we are able to approach the church or approach the Lord in a different way. It's a little bit like falling in love, right? There's maybe a moment where suddenly you see this person differently, and I would argue that you see that person more truly, right? Only the person who loves us really sees us for who we are. So there is this notion when we talk about the Feast of the Epiphany, there's this idea that, and I've preached many times about faith as another way of seeing. Right, that two people can look at the same event or look at the same thing, and based on whether they have the gift of faith and the degree to which they have it, they're going to see those things differently. And the person who has the gift of faith is able to see reality more as it really is. And maybe that's what we want to say epiphany is. Epiphany is a deeper entry into reality as it really is. Now, this image of the Magi, I do think, you know, this is my Western bias, I guess, but I do think it's a particularly beautiful image of this concept of epiphany. And one of the things I love about it is the Magi, our tradition tells us they were essentially philosophers and astronomers from the East, right? So they were foreigners, they were not part of Judea, but they were men who earnestly and honestly sought the Lord according to the means they had available to them. And it's especially beautiful that the Lord revealed himself through the things that they looked at, right? So whether it be in the ancient world, whether it's through the sciences, through the study of creation, or through philosophy, or through astronomy, looking at the stars, those honest searchings after truth led these wise men to the Lord. And so it was a star, and it's a beautiful thing, right? They'd searched for truth in the stars. They sought to understand the meaning of reality by gazing at the heavens. And because of their honest openness to reality, those heavens guided them to the Lord Jesus, and they found the answer that they'd been searching for. I think this is such a beautiful image of this concept of epiphany, because more often than not, the Lord reveals himself to us through the ordinary things in our lives. Now, there is such a thing as supernatural intervention. There is such a thing as the Lord reaching out and sort of touching our hearts and turning on lights that way. But most often, the way he reveals himself to us is in the things around us. Right? In other words, we see the truth, the goodness, the beauty. We see the Lord's glory in the effects of his works. A couple images I would use of this. I have a memory in my mind of being in Rome at St. Peter's Basilica early in the morning and seeing, you know, the air kind of heavily filled with smoke because there's about 30 masses going on in the basilica. And so there's just incense kind of hovering above the air. And the morning sun was coming through the window, and you can see, and you've all seen this somewhere, whether it be because of smoke or because of dust or whatever, where you know, you can see the rays of the light slanting in through the window. Now, normally we don't see the rays of the sun, right? The reason we see light is we see light's effect on other things, right? I see light because I can see this gentleman here, and I can see the effect that light has on him. Or that morning in the basilica, I saw these beautiful rays of light coming down to the floor because the light was acting on the incense and I was able to see it. Similarly, we could say that we know that Michelangelo was a genius because we have the Sistine Chapel and we have the David, right? We know that Mozart was a genius because we have his Requiem. We know that Dostoevsky was a genius because we have the Brothers Karamazov, right? So we can sort of see the glory of these people by their masterpieces, by their works. And I would say the same thing is true of God's glory in our day-to-day lives. We can see the glory of the Lord in his works. And if we want to see the God is an artist, and if we want to see his masterpieces, there's a lot of things we could look at. We can look at nature. You can go out to the mountains, go out to the Grand Canyon. You're looking at a masterpiece of God. But I think his real masterpieces are his saints. And when we look at his saints, we are seeing his handiwork. We're seeing what happens when somebody really hands themselves over to him. I will say this about saints, and this applies to us as well. I used as an image these artists, but holiness is a cooperative art, right? I always tell my teachers, education is a cooperative art. And what I mean by that is if you're a sculptor and you're working with wood, the wood is basically going to do what you tell it to do. And your ability to make a good statue is dependent on your skill, but it's not so dependent on how the wood acts. Similarly, if you're a painter, if you're a master painter, the paint's going to do what you tell it to do. When you're a teacher, it doesn't quite work that way, right? You can be a really good teacher, and the student might still not learn because education is a cooperative art. Holiness is a cooperative art. The Lord doesn't want us to be like statues. He wants us to be little images of himself. He wants us to be free, which means we have to participate in his artwork. And so when we look at the saints, we're looking at people that really cooperated well with the artist. People that use their free will to allow him to make them into a masterpiece. Holiness is a cooperative art. But when we see a saint, so I'm going to encourage you, get to know the saints as well as you can. Develop relationships with them. Have devotions to them. Read good biographies about saints. It really does, I think, deepen our faith. And it awakens a deeper love for us, in us for God, because we can see his glory in his works, in this holy person who really made themselves kind of clay to be molded in his hands. I was at a conference recently, and a priest told us, and it really struck me as true, he said, if you ever have a chance to go see a saint, or in other words, if there's somebody that generally is thought to be very holy by many people, do whatever you can to go see them. Because it's a moment of glory. It's a moment of deepening your faith, of sharpening your own love for God. I've only, as far as I know, so far in my life, seen one saint, and that was John Paul II. But I can tell you that there was something magnificent that happened just when John Paul II was physically present. It affected not just me, but everybody around me, right? And that's because God's glory was really shining through John Paul II. And actually, if you look at just some of the saints that we have available to us from recent history. I'm thinking of like Padre Pio, John Paul II, obviously, St. John Vianney. These are all people that were known for their holiness. People could tell there's something special about them, and people flocked en masse to go see them, to be close to them. That's because whether they realize it or not, they're trying to get a glimpse of God's glory shining through this person. So, my one thing for you today is get to know the saints, love the saints, develop devotions to the saints, have relationships with them, learn about them. It will, I promise you, deepen your faith and your love for the Lord. And stemming from that, I want to say too, and this is my last point, is that the Lord wants all of us to be saints. Right? We said holiness is a cooperative art. Well, guess what? He intends for each of us to be one of his masterpieces. Now, we don't have to be because we're free. We can say, I don't want to be a masterpiece of the Lord's grace. Or we can foolishly try to become a masterpiece of our own devising. Right? I want to make myself into a masterpiece. Well, you won't. But the Lord does want to make you a masterpiece. But you have to cooperate. But we also see that we play, as the faithful, an important role in the continuing epiphany of God's glory. Right? We see this in what God said to his people Israel, that one of the important roles they were to play was they were to be a light shining to the nations, right? That the people were to look at the holiness of Israel and therefore see God. And the same thing is true of us. The Lord wants to make us masterpieces, and he wants us to be a light to the nations. He wants the goodness, the love, the beauty of Jesus Christ to shine in each of us so that others may have an experience of the manifestation of God's glory through our presence in their lives.